Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul.
Very good. Guess what? There's rumors of war still going on. Yet not too many people are worried, so maybe we worry over time. But if somebody doesn't worry a little bit before the wars, how can you prevent them? But there's still a lot of talk about war, and figuring out exactly where our administration stands, that's a real challenge. Are we closer to war or further from war? And he claims the policy there is to be strong and tough, and that'll prevent war. But we have a few questions about the policy. One has been the excitement and the challenges made and the references to Korea right now, that Koreans are bad guys. We know the president there is a little goofy, and he wants a nuclear weapon, and he keeps threatening us. And the National Security Agency says that Kit McFarland says that he's probably going to have a nuke, you know, that will hit the United States, during the Trump administration. Therefore, we have to do a lot. And, of course, Trump has leaned toward bashing China, you know, when it comes to currencies and trade policies. At the same time, he's meeting with Xi this week, the president of China. They're coming, and they're talking about this. But he's been pretty sharp, and I have to try to figure out whether he's just setting the stage for his negotiations and so that he can win all the negotiations, or just what is going on. But he also, is threatening them to the point that they have to do certain things. He's expecting them to conform to what he wants. And it's amazing. Attack on one sense and then expect them to respond in a favorable manner. But already there's been a little bit of hints that they are capitulating a little bit to our more bombastic foreign policy, because they have participated in sanctions against North Korea. And that's their business, of course, you know, they're next door. But I'm just wondering, whether China really has control of the situation. I sort of suspect the North Koreans, have over the several decades been able to manipulate us, that we sort of pay them off to calm them down a little bit. At the same time, we get the excuse to increase our militarization and building more weapons and all this. So that's our job today, Daniel, to figure out exactly what's going on there and what is Trump up to in North Korea.
Yes, well, you know, the big news this week is that Trump is going to meet Xi, as you said, down in Florida. And as our title suggests, we wonder if this is grandstanding or bombast. You know, but he came out over the weekend and said, China has better solved this North Korea problem, or we're going to solve it for them. Which is an interesting way to preview a meeting. You have to wonder where it might take it from there.
Yeah, I wonder what he really means. But, you know, his staff, I mean, in his cabinet, they have frequently said, we take nothing off the table, which is usually a code war word for saying that, if necessary, we'll drop a nuke on them. And that's a little bit of overkill, you know, in conversation. But it's also, a problem. And we haven't given up on those nuclear weapons. We still have several thousand, like 13,000 nuclear weapons. And yet the big thing is here we have Stratcom General. He's saying we don't have enough nukes. We need more nukes. And dealing with people like, China, and dealing with Korea. And he's claiming that the hundreds of billions that we're planning to use, and Trump's all for this, to rebuild and to expand our nuclear capacity, he says it's not enough. He says it has to be $1 trillion as a starter. He says this has to go on to into many trillions of dollars to build nuclear weapons. And he says, and plan to do it for 30 years. Perpetual war. It's good for business, I guess. But that's the kind of talk that's going on. But their logic is this, whether we're talking about Korea or wherever, their logic is, if you're not tough and you don't spend these trillions of dollars on weapons and bombs, that you're going to have a war, and war is more expensive than paying for these weapons. Well, maybe we could have peace without spending money on the weapons and have two wins instead of two losses, because usually this militant conversation leads to hostilities and all this badgering and threats and trade barriers and all this. That, to me, is crazy. The other thing that the general said that was mentioning we need more nukes was that the one thing you should quit doing is worrying about the money. He said, when you're talking about weaponry, don't get an estimate. You know, and we never do. They have the clause always say cost overruns always goes to the taxpayer. But he was philosophically opposed to even trying to get an estimate. So here we need 30 years of building nuclear weapons. Don't ever get an estimate and think that this is the road to peace and prosperity. I think there's some thinking in there that I consider deeply flawed.
And then they wonder why everyone else thinks they need one, too. You know, it's threatening. But, you know, the thing that I'm wondering most about this the deal with Trump and China and Xi is whether or not, and I think there's some pretty good evidence, that Trump is miscalculating the level of influence that China has over North Korea. You know, Trump is, and I don't know who's talking to him. I think he has some pretty anti-China people on his National Security Council staff. But he's being told, I suspect, you better push China because China's the only country that can get North Korea to do what we tell them to do. But there's a lot of reasons why China isn't. It lacks the capacity of influencing North Korea's opinion makers, for one. And to a degree, it lacks the will, and that's really because of the legacy of the Korean War, to apply too much pressure. As you pointed out, they did block the export of North Korean coal the last time North Korea tested a ballistic missile as a symbolic gesture toward the United States. They blocked, and China is the only country that North Korea exports coal to. But, you know how sanctions are. Do you think it's going to hurt the North Korean leadership that the poor old North Koreans can no longer have, you know, even bad jobs mining coal? No, it's not.
You know, when the Cold War was going on with the Soviet system, we worried a lot about it, and rightfully so, especially when there were missiles in Cuba. But it went on that the biggest concern should have been for the Soviets and the world with the lack of expectation in the power of the marketplace, because communism was doomed to fail, and it fell apart, and the war was won by, the West, in the sense of the Cold War being successful, that it defeated communism, or communism defeated itself. But even amidst all this saber-rattling that's going on in these threats, you know, there was another announcement this week that the Russians and the Chinese, and I think the Indians are willing to go along with it, and that is develop a new currency. And get away from using the dollar as the reserve currency, and they would buy and sell. I don't think they're on the verge of upsetting the apple cart completely, but who knows what's going to happen? You know, if there's all of a sudden a downturn in the dollar and we have a lot of inflation, maybe there will be enough people in the world that would look for an alternative to the use of dollar. And that could mean there could be an event that brings us down economically much more significantly than the militarization of what's going on, just as it was with the Soviets. So it was an economic policy that they should have talked about. But, you know, when the end came for the Soviet system, the tanks didn't roll in. Gorbachev says, You can't stop an idea with a tank.
Yeah.
And so it's this ideology and the failure of ideologies that really drive forces. So the economics are important. The only time Trump talks about this is, well, we need trade barriers. We need to be tough on protectionism. And we need to bash people who currency manipulate. But not the United States. We would never think about manipulating our currency just because we have responsibility provide the currency of the world. So we're exempt from all that.
And it seems ironically, you talk about the economics of it, ironically our bombastic foreign policy may be hastening that day when other countries are looking into another currency, you know, we're the authors of our own demise. But, you know, what I was reading about is, what may be on the table, which is probably, you know, we were looking for a glimmer of hope. And if this were to come forth, I think it probably would be the best scenario, which is the idea of a grand bargain. And that's where China, and they tried to do this recently, where China is able to successfully pressure North Korea on this missile program, back off of the missile program. In exchange, the U.S. will withdraw its troops from the Korean Peninsula. That sounds like a win-win. I don't know that Trump would go for it.
Ian, I think along with that is then those war games. I mean, the peninsula is the key to it. But just all these ships going up and down the South China Sea, you know, is just provocation. So yeah. It isn't the best thing to do. But, The other thing is the nukes are an important thing to deal with, but that's secondary to, you know, the political philosophy of what's going on. But, you know, this past week there was probably a lot more danger involved with a confrontation on two allies of ours, Pakistan and India. They both have nukes, and they haven't done it under the law, but we don't go marching in to get rid of their nukes. You know, they have over the decades, but argument was stirring up. That probably is a lot more dangerous than North Korea bombing California. You know, I mean, that is just, you know, pretty much over the top. And the best thing that they could do if they had this breakthrough, one other thing that would be a tremendous benefit, but sort of like the resistance to allowing Cuban Americans talking to their relatives in Cuba, we wouldn't want them to get on good terms. It's this whole idea that South Koreans can't visit North Korea. But we object to this. I talked to a young man that was born and became a teenager there and lives here now, and he said that would be the best thing in the world, to allow the people in South Korea to at least exchange ideas and views and visits. I mean, they're not going to carry a nuclear bomb, and they're not going to carry guns back and forth. All they want to do is go and talk to their relatives. Yeah. I mean, that would be a long way. So there are so many things, but you don't hear about that. It's like, do it our way, or we might bomb you. We're taking nothing off the table. I just think that is going in the opposite direction.
And you know, the strange thing is that the real existing U.S. foreign policy makes what we want our foreign policy to be impossible. In other words, we want North Korea to not have a nuke, but our policy, our aggressive policy toward North Korea, makes them feel like they have to get a nuke, just like what happened with Gaddafi when he gave up his nuclear program. It wasn't that many years afterward that he was overthrown. So the message is, if you give up your nukes, you stand likely to be overthrown.
I want to mention another subject. We've talked a little bit about it, but it's still in the news because it's expanding, and that is Trump's position that he has to give more immediate authority to his generals, you know, to the commanders to make decisions. And, you know, a little bit this could be true if you're in World War II, commanders has to have, I imagine they would have to have flexibility. A better thing would be to stay out of those wars. But he wants to give their commanders more authority now to decide when to bomb and where to move the troops, along with the whole idea that Trump doesn't want to tell us when he's sending more troops. They don't declare war. They don't tell us what's going now. And we can't tell the enemy that we're sending troops over here. And I think it's really, in a way, it's sort of unusual because Trump is a strong person, strong personality, but it's almost setting the stage for undermining the civilian control of our military, because the commanders are getting more control, and they're the ones who are stirring this up. They're involved in, you know, negotiating and sort of lobbying for more nuclear weapons and more troops and more spending. So, but giving the commanders more authority, doing things that they shouldn't even be doing because technically they're illegal under our law and international law for us to be in these countries, undermining governments and involved in regime change and all these things. So I think that overall that's, even if Trump can handle it, you know, the commanders, if he's keeping an eye on it, but this whole idea that commanders have more control, I think is a dangerous direction to go in.
And you point out, you know, the difference because, and especially in your latest column, which is available on the Ron Paul Institute website, you point out that really the culprit here is Congress.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the thing. In a war, if we were in a war, Congress wouldn't be second-guessing the president's decisions on the battlefield or how he delegates responsibility for carrying out that war. But because Congress is so asleep, I think you said, they don't stand up. They don't declare war. There's absolutely no stretch of the imagination that would allow the U.S. to get involved in Yemen on the 2001 authorization for Afghanistan. So Congress is really the culprit here. They've got to stand up and they've got to tell the president, you will tell us where you're sending these troops, and you will get a declaration or an authorization, or you won't have any money. You'll have to pay yourself.
And I would go down, I'd go back one more step. I mean, we're in a bad situation of losing our liberties, and we can't, you know, our votes don't really count, and so much goes on behind the scenes. Everything is secret. But there's still enough freedom in this country for the American people to speak out. And the Congress should carry out. But the American people aren't speaking out. You know, in the 60s, the war came to an end because there were demonstrations here at home to the tune of hundreds of thousands. Yeah. We've had enough of this killing. And that brought our troops home and ended the war in Vietnam. So the American people have a responsibility. I wished we had more people in Congress, but they're political animals. They will respond. If they thought for a minute to continue this nonsense would jeopardize their jobs, they would change their tune. So they would respond. But right now, there's a lot of apathy, and a lot of people succumb to listening to the propaganda. Well, you can't let this crazy guy get a nuclear weapon and drop it on San Francisco. But, you know, how did we go to war in Iraq? All that nonsense about Saddam Hussein about ready to do that to him. Weapons of mass destruction. There was nothing there. It was all based on lies. And this whole thing is just propaganda. And when they talk about a 30-year program for building nuclear weapons in order to stop war, and that you shouldn't even ask questions of how much it's going to cost. I mean, that's where we are today. So I would say that the American people need to wake up so that they can wake up the Congress and get their attention. Right now, though, I'm not very confident with the current type of government we have, except for our few of our friends. But it's a lonely fight for them. But I think when I go around the country speaking, I find a lot of people where our views are alive and well, and they're endorsed by a lot of young people, and they know what's going on. They know that all this nonsense, whether it's the runaway welfare spending, the runaway debt, as well as the runaway militarism, it's all financed through a corrupt Federal Reserve system, and the people in the world still taking our dollars. We manipulate our currency because we have the authority and the right to print as much as we want and buy whatever we want, and you will take our dollars. If you don't do what we say, we're going to put financial sanctions on you and ruin your country, just like you know, the nonsense over Ukraine. You know, we put on tremendous sanctions on Russia, and none of that was justifiable because they were distorting things. Same thing with Syria. Just think that the UN ambassador just the other day back harping on, well, don't you know that Assad poisoned his own people three different times? You know, it's just all this false propaganda, and the American people, you know, they're torn. They want peace, they want prosperity, they don't want this, but then again, you know, if they bomb us and the nukes come and get us, what good's a little bit of freedom? You know, so they get shifted over into this other category.
Well, let's hope there's some new thinking that we see next week in the meeting between Xi and Trump. And, you know, let's hope the idea of some kind of a grand bargain will replace the worn-out, discredited, ineffective idea of sanctions.
Very good, and I would go along with that. That's what we need, and I want to thank our viewers today for tuning in. I know that sounds a bit like rehash, but there are additional factors today. I mean, whether it's the preparation for war against Iran and this whole thing of, you know, our relationship with China and then our threats to North Korea by avoiding the few things that Daniel and I have mentioned here that we could do that would change the whole scenario. Unfortunately, over the decades, the North Koreans have been able to badger us, and they usually end up getting some money from us. And they say, okay, we won't build our nuclear weapon now. Well, so far, I don't think they're as far along. It's sort of like, you know, Iraq was on the verge of having a nuclear weapon. The Iranians, I think, actually are really participating in the UN resolutions. They're not on the verge of having a nuclear weapon, although they're totally surrounded by, you know, foreign governments, mostly ours, around their countries with dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of nuclear weapons. And yet people work in fear that the Iranians are coming, or the Russians are coming, the Iraqis are coming, and now it's the North Koreans are coming. You know, we put the map up so often of North Korea and South Korea. It should tell us everything why we should calm down. It's the map of the picture of this Korean peninsula at night. There's one little light in the whole northern Korea. They can't eat, and South Korea is lit up. And then we're saying, oh yeah, we have to be threatened. Well, they can't even, they probably don't even have enough electricity to run running water if there was a war. So, and they spend most of their money, you know, on militarism. Just leave them alone, talk to them, because they're going to self-destruct. Socialism always self-destructs, as it did in the Soviet system, as it has done in Venezuela, and as it has done in Zimbabwe. All these, socialism and communism is a dead philosophy. It'll kill itself. But what we need to do is present a better case for freedom and liberty, because we don't have freedom markets, and we don't have sound money, and we're not protecting the liberties and the privacies of the American people. That's what we need to do. I'll tell you, if we moved in that direction, we'd have a much greater chance to achieve peace and prosperity in our time. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.